You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
This is 90-something podcast.
I know it sounds mental, but sometimes I have more fun vegging out than when I go partying. Maybe because my party clothes are so binding.
You're an idiot.
I'll show you. Starting tomorrow, you'll see I'm just as sane as anybody.
But I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
Smelly cat, smelly cat, what are they feeding you?
Mentos, the fresh maker.
Alright, so this is Banzai Retro Club. I am Dave, and I have got my good friend Scott on.
Hello!
And another wonderful super friend, Rose.
I'm a super friend. Yay! Hi, everybody.
Is this like the super friends?
The super
now?
Friends.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm a super friend.
Oh, man.
Form of a, I don't know.
Ice cube.
Some ice cube. Something from the 90s. I don't know. Form of a Furby.
Where?
Oh, my God. Form of a Spice Girl.
Oh my god.
But it's okay. We'll work on that.
Alright, so where we're at? We're on episode 6 now. So this is episode 6, 90-something. We're going to be talking about our top 3 1990s movies. So these are movies that came out somewhere in the decade in the 1990s. I don't know about Scott and Rose, but I was looking through the list earlier today, and I've come up with no less than 14 really great movies to talk about, and I've actually got the worst movie of the 90s to mention also. So
really?
It's going to be tough for me. This is going to be really tough. But I'm curious to see if we're going to be sticking with some big blockbusters, popular movies, or are we going to be verging off to some obscure stuff? With this group, you never know. So, with all that under our belt, Scott, lead us off. Tell us where's the number one pick for you?
Number one is a blockbuster, definitely for me.
Nice.
And that would definitely be You Can Take Our Lives, But You Will Never Take My Freedom.
Oh my goodness.
Little Braveheart. You know how many I've watched that 3-hour epic movie so many times I can't even count it anymore. It's something that I'll just, you know, it's one of those ones that I carry around in my iPod just to have as entertainment if I'm waiting somewhere or just trying to kill time, maybe on a plane. Braveheart is one of my go-tos. It was just so well done, and it's a tragic love story that people don't see it that way, but that's really what it is. Yes, they have lots of barbaric fighting and stuff like that, but it was just really fascinating. You know, it grabbed my attention the first time I saw it. I was blown away, and I still can't get enough of it. So,
I'm the evil guy. Oh my god, what was his name?
Longshanks.
No, the one that was like a really good sword fighter. Oh, jeez, come on, Dave.
On Braveheart?
Yeah.
Like the enemy?
Robert the Bruce?
Oh my gosh, I'm looking here. I'm looking. Let me see here. So this is.
I don't remember a specific sword fighter from Braveheart that was the enemy. Like there were. It was mostly Longshanks, the king, that was the evil one.
Well, I mean, Braveheart. Okay, do I have the movies crossed here? Wasn't Braveheart the one where his? I did get confused. Uh-oh. Yeah, wow. I had it very confused because I was remembering the movie where his wife got raped.
No,
you're talking about the Highlander.
Highlander.
No. Definitely know the Scottish movie, but it's not Braveheart. It's not Highlander.
Okay.
Talk amongst yourselves. I got to figure this out in my brain.
It's not. I don't recall Mel Gibson being in that one.
No, he was not. Now, crap.
It's kind of hard to talk amongst ourselves when you're doing that.
All right, sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I'm sure you'll figure it out.
Well, now I'm curious what it is too. So, how do we look this up?
So, was it Scottish? Was it a Scottish movie? Scottish-based movie?
Liam Neeson.
Oh, okay, yeah. Rob Roy.
Yes. Oh,
Roy.
That's it. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was crossing the streams there. That's exactly what I was. So Braveheart, I remember the part where his buddy threw the big rock.
Yes.
Right, okay. So that now I'm back on track now.
That would be his name was Hamish.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was like a thing where they would throw rocks against each other and you would not move.
Well, it was more so they were trying to practice for when the English would attack because that was their only weapon. They weren't allowed to have like swords and weapons. They had to use like primitive type weaponry. So they were very oppressed. The Scottish were very oppressed during those times. What was that? 1200 years, somewhere around that range. I think maybe 13. I'd have to watch the beginning of the movie again because they say it in the beginning. Anyway, it's just the battle scenes are just unbelievable. The amounts of people that they use in those things. And, the overall storyline was really good. And, you know, it's somewhat based on events that happened back then, according to history. But, you know, that was so long ago, how do you know really what happened?
Let me ask you this.
Yep.
If Mel Gibson, his Latter-day Saints, does that do anything to taint that movie?
Latter-day Saints?
Latter-day Sins. That's it.
Oh.
Latter-day Saints, because he kind of went off the reservation there and got a little weird.
He did.
So does that change your affection to a movie?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes it depends on the situation, I guess, of where the actor goes. He got a little strange there for a little bit, but at the time it was. It's still, I just still think the movie is phenomenal. It doesn't really matter if it was Mel Gibson playing that role, or it could have been, you know, a number of different actors that could have played that role just as well, in my opinion. But it's the story and the production value of it. It was just very well done, that's how I feel. So,
all right, Braveheart, you got anything on that, Rose?
Unfortunately, I do.
Unfortunately.
You do not like it.
No.
Too many men dressed up in dresses.
No. The thing about that is, I saw it when it first came out. And I was impressed with everything that went on. Yes, it kind of dragged on for a while. But at the time, you know, it's like, it's an historical movie and we get it. I'm trying to think. Tom Cruise made one with Nicole Kidman, and then this one came out. I can't remember the other one, though. Ice so, Tom you. Cruise. No, he was back all in about the day, the land. He was Irish.
It was all about the land. There was a drinking game with that movie, actually, with the Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman one, that every time they said the land, you were supposed to take a drink, because apparently they say it a lot. I what don't remember. That was what called was Far and Away.
Thank you. Far and Away.
Am I right? I did not look that up.
No, thank you. I commend Mel Gibson for having a Scottish accent a lot longer than Tom Cruise had an Irish accent.
Yeah.
In the movie. He basically maintained it through the whole film. Yay, Mel. However, a few years down the road, I ended up marrying a Scotsman. And we went to Edinburgh. And we were touring Edinburgh Castle. And someone in the tour had mentioned, oh, look, this looks like something from that movie Braveheart. And the tour guide whipped around and went, I wouldn't do that if I were you. what? Richard looked at me like, honestly, I think he kind of took a step back. Like, yeah, I know she's with me, but yeah. I'm like, from here. The guy literally went off on this whole, yeah, it was a well-done movie. Yeah, it had Mel Gibson in it. Yeah, it was kind of about Scotland. The history, it's a bit iffy. No, yeah. That never happened. And he just, it was like 20 minutes that he just, we're all just kind of standing there going, sorry. Don't know what to tell you. We're not from Hollywood. We're just people on tour seeing like the actual thing. So yeah, so it got kind of, I saw the movie quite a few times actually. And I honestly, I guess I'm just that impressionable that after I heard how many different foibles, is that a word I can use in this context? that were made on the actual history of that event.
Oh yeah.
After that. So sorry.
Yeah. No, I just thought it was a, you know, really interesting and fun movie.
Especially it is.
Like it's that guy. If you like that guy, I mean, oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
The acting across the board is, it's, you know, yeah, Mel Gibson did a great job, but you have so many supporting cast members that really it was believable. The whole thing was believable.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you know? They did an amazing job making that movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right,
so that, I think that's the thing that you have. Now.
Not to bring up Braveheart if I ever go to Scotland. Got it.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry. Unless you're condemning it. How dare those damn people make that. Kidding. That was great.
All right, so I'm going to go to my first pick, not my next pick. Really, well, you guys would be able to tell this right off the bat, but am I here to fucking amuse you?
Oh.
Nice. What am I, a clown?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, your amusement. Oh, my God.
He's a big boy. He said it. He can tell me.
How the fuck am I funny?
You tell me. You said it.
Oh, my God.
So great. You're Joe amazing. Pesci was amazing in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
The whole cast, Ray Liotta. Robert De Niro,
Bobby D,
Paul Sorvino. I mean, these guys. I mean, that movie, just everything about it was just awesome. And what I wanted to come up with my picks was, I was trying to think of movies where there's movies that are on my list that I like the majority of the movie, but not like the whole movie. But this one, I could never get tired of, and I could watch it over and over again. There's not a bad part at all. It gets a little weird when he starts getting into the drug part, but it adds something to his character, where how paranoid he's getting.
Yeah.
And I think Ray Liotta does an awesome job. And the whole storyline with Joe Pesci getting, spoiler, gets killed when he thinks he's going to get made. It's classic.
Oh, you know, that was sad.
Yeah, it's just, and, you know, just because he killed a made man before, and they didn't forget, you know, and it was just like, well, of course not. You know, of course that's something that they're going to keep in their back pocket, and then when they finally have that opportunity, and bam, you're gone. You know, and it was, and I actually just saw part of that the other day. And what was happening was De Niro's character, James Conway, he was calling up to, you know, because he's so excited, you know, one of their own is getting made, one of them, you know, so it's kind of like they're all getting made and going to be one of the good fellas. And, you know, so he calls up to see, you know, how everything went with the ceremony or whatever it is that they go through. And the guy on the other side of the phone, it was just very simply, you know, well, he didn't make it. You know, it's so casual about it. No, he didn't make it. You know, these things happen. It's just kind of like, are you kidding me? Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's very akin to just a different way of doing a like a termination at work or something. You're just like, eh, he didn't make it. Let's move on.
Yep. Yep.
Let's move on. We had to cut him out.
Goodness.
It's all good now. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. But yeah, even at the end when he's kind of giving the dialogue, Henry Hill, or like Ray Liotta's character, you know, about, you know, he's, you know, he can't even get a good, what was the sauce he was looking for?
Marinara?
Yeah, good marinara sauce. He's, you know, I asked for marinara, they gave me ketchup. You know, and I'm just sitting around like every other schmuck waiting for something to happen. You know, but then he has a big grin on his face because he's alive. So, but, yeah, great movie for me. So what do you think, Rose?
You know, it's just, I wanted to be able to see as many, you know, movies, like you see movies that are coming out, and you go into the theater, and you're like, oh, I guess I'll have to wait till that comes out on DVD or VHS or whatever form of, you know, entertainment it's coming out on. And I didn't remember going to the movies to see Goodfellas, but I remember wanting to see it. And then when I did, I literally, it was like watching Scarface. To me, I'm not comparing the two movies, but the amount of violence and vulgarity and, you know, curse, you know, I'll drop an F-bomb just as well as the next person, but holy, your whole entire sentence is nothing. I kind of felt like, you know, like I was sitting in front of like a wind tunnel or something, and I'd like push myself back from the TV, like, holy crap! Really? Again? Oh my God. You know, but I don't know. I'm not really that fond of gangster movies. Like, back in the day, gangster movies, they were cool to me. You know, Jimmy Cagney, Humphrey Bogart, people like that. That was cool to me. All of this, you know, machine guns and, you know, killing everybody every 5 seconds, and, you know, your mother's this, and this is that, and blah, 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 and all this, and I'm just like, holy crap. I'm not saying it wasn't a good movie, just, I was not my cup of tea. I only watched it the one time, and every so often there was references, like, I saw a reference not too long ago with Joe Pesci, and they're all sitting around having dinner at his mom's, and he's like, hey, Mom, he's like, you wanted to borrow the good kitchen knife. Or something like that. Just like, do I remember that part? You know, I was just watching a clip, you know, I can't even remember why. And she's like giving him all these tips about how to take care of it and bring it back and all this stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, I think he's going to kill somebody with that.
They had somebody dying in their trunk already.
That.
Yeah.
You had to finish him off.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he borrowed his mom's knife to do it.
And had dinner you know, and her just that whole casual conversation and everything. Like, oh, before I forget, yeah, let me get that from you so I can get something. You know, I don't know. It's, I personally think from that movie, just me, I think that kind of stereotyped Ray Liotta for like ever. I think they always wanted, any movie he was in, they always wanted him to play that crazy person.
Yeah.
You know, what he was saying in the next minute, you know, the eyes are big and he's like all psychotic and stuff. You didn't see him for a long time. In
yeah,
anything.
He plays crazy well.
He does. He does crazy really well.
Yeah. So, Scott, where are you at with Goodfellas?
Probably my favorite mob movie. I put it above. I put it above the Godfather.
Wow.
Yeah, seriously. I think the Godfather was well done and all that, but and Al Pacino was great in those in the series, at least the first two. But I really think that Goodfellas really captured what you envisioned the mob life to be like. And, you know, not that it's glorious by any means. I mean, it's friggin' hardcore, man. I don't know how any of those people actually do it, especially back in the day. I don't know how it's run today. It didn't seem as prevalent as it used to be, at least not in the news or anything. But it just seems like that's the way it would have been. And it was just, I've watched this movie many times over, and it was one that I was considering for my list tonight. Love Joe Pesci, love Ray Liotta in it, Robert De Niro, Lorraine Bracco was great in that movie.
She was fabulous mm-hmm. in that movie.
Yeah, she was amazing in that movie. And then when she came back as, you know, the psychologist on The Sopranos, I'm like, wow, that's perfect. It was just so fitting that she was, you know, being from that movie and all, and then into The Sopranos. It's great. So overall, just in my book, 5 stars. So well done. That scene that you started with the how am I funny? I have used those lines so many times in so many different little funny situations. You know, people say, "Oh, that's funny." Yeah, how is that funny? You know, you just turn it around on them and they get it. They most people get it right away, because I mean, this was a very popular movie. A lot of people have seen it, but I just absolutely love this movie. It's great. The story, I really like stories that have narration included into the movie, you know, because you hear them talking about this happened and this happened and so and so and did this, and then they would go and you would see the scenes act out, and then later on in the movie you'd hear a little bit more narration. And mm-hmm. I think I don't know why that style of movie I like. Kind of like I like the mockumentaries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the fake documentaries. I just think that's one of the funniest ways of doing comedy movies. But anyway, that's another story. So yeah, absolutely great pick, man.
Yeah, and that you make a great point, because even that, you know, he's giving the monologue during the whole thing, but then they wrap it up at the end of the movie where he's on the stand and he starts giving the monologue to the camera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was just kind of like, that was unexpected. You weren't expecting him to start talking to the audience. You know, so he broke through that barrier, you know, to actually talk to the camera, you know, as like he was continuing his story.
And right.
It was just really well done. And
you know, it's just like at the end of Ferris Bueller, or the beginning of Ferris Bueller, when he turns and talks to the camera.
Right.
Anyway. All right, that's an awesome, awesome pick, man.
Coolness. All right, Rose, your first pick.
Well, I seriously doubt anybody's got this on their list, so I'm going to laud it from the mountaintops. The first time I think I ever saw Wesley Snipes, I think it was the Bad video with Michael Jackson, and he played a local neighborhood gangster, and y'all know the premise of the song Bad.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson was part of that group, and then he went to this fancy school, and he comes back, and he's like, you ain't bad, man. And I heard something recently, I think, that they wanted Prince for that role, and he went like, oh, hell no. And then it's like, Wesley Snipes got it, and then history was made. For him to take on the role of a superhero, because if you ever read the Blade comic books, he's technically a superhero. He's a vampire, but he's a daywalker, and he's got all of the same, you know, biological makeup of a vampire, but he can resist quite a few things. He can't resist the hunger, though. So apparently nobody can resist that, but he has the serum that was created for him by Whistler in order to resist the hunger. When I first saw this movie, I love vampire movies anyway. Just the whole premise of the vampire community. Okay, let me retract some of that. What's that crap with the sparkly people? Twilight? No. Not into that. Not into that. Sorry, I saw one.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Spice World.
No.
There are vampires in Spice World? Light.
No, but it's very sparkly.
Like a holiday. Anywho, so it's the whole premise of the movie is you get his backstory. His mom was bitten and turned, and he thinks she's dead. Spoiler alert, she's not. And then he goes out and he's looking for this guy. Let's say Ethan Hawke. I probably should look it up on IMDb instead of trying to guess. But I own the first two. The first one came out in 1998, and the second one 2002. And then they did a Blade Trinity in 2004 with the kind of popular, but not quite yet popular, Ryan Reynolds. And I didn't like that one because he cracked jokes through the whole thing. I didn't think he was funny. So I was boycotting the third one for a long time. But Wesley Snipes being a vampire, he's got the sword, he's kicking people's ass left and right, is amazing. And he's just unstoppable. And at some point, you see him stopped because they have to take like everything they've got to bring him down. But, Stephen Dorff. Sorry, Ethan Hawke. You guys kind of look alike. So Stephen Dorff played the bad guy. Deacon, somebody. Anyway, so it was just the whole premise of the movie. You know, he's a vampire, and he is anti-bloodsucker, as he calls him. And he's kicking ass left and right. And the second one is actually better than the first one. I didn't think I could do that, because sometimes the second one's kind of crap. And then the first one is like, okay, the first one's better. But I shouldn't say that. I should say just equally as good, because it's got Ron Perlman in it. But it's just, I don't know. It just, the whole premise of it is great. Wesley Snipes is amazing. Just totally love how in control he is, and just very, I don't know. If you ever seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. He's just, he owns it. He totally owns that movie. And I see why they waited a few years before they made a second one. But I heard there was like a TV series or something, but just couldn't get myself to bring myself to watch it.
Yeah, I got nothing on this movie. I haven't seen it. I've heard mm-hmm. great things about it from, you know, people mm-hmm. that are fans, you know, comic books. I know it'd be up my alley, but yeah, I just never made mm-hmm. time for it. So what about you, Scott?
I remember seeing it once. I never really got into it, but I do remember the premise being really a cool kind of a different take on vampires, which I just, you know, you get the same old vampire thing over and over again, but this was mm-hmm. kind of cool. It's a vampire who's kind of, you know, out to kill other vampires, basically.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting point of view for it. And I do remember that I enjoyed the movie when I watched it, but it wasn't anything that I wanted to go back and revisit and watch over again, and I never saw the second or third one. It's good movie, though. Good pick. Definitely something that was very popular at the time. You know. Oh, this is a terrible pick, Rose. What are you thinking?
There's a battle royale between Kiefer from Lost Boys and Blade. Who wins?
Oh, shit.
I think Blade, probably.
Blade would stomp that little child's behind.
Yeah. You said Kiefer. Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
He's only, what, 5'2"? Yeah. He's formidable in his own right. You know, Kiefer Sutherland, Lost Boys. I mean, that's like a whole different, you know, kettle of fish. But
he was more of a mental menace.
Yeah, he was all psychological.
Menace, and, you know, I mean, yeah, they had a little bit of a throwdown at the end of the movie there in Lost Boys, but really, Wesley Snipes in this one, that was, you know,
yeah,
the sword work that he did in that. It must have taken a lot of practice for to get down all that choreography.
Oh, I know. Just that one thing that he does, that spin, and you hear the blade whipping in the air, and he puts it down on the ground, and he's like, bam! You're like, do that again! That was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, but he's probably thinking, fuck, I did this move so many times, did I get it right? But yeah.
Alright, so Scott, what's your second pick?
You know, this is really, I mean, I have so many really good choices.
Top three is tough on this.
It really was for me. I was looking through the whole list of, like, the top 200 movies, and I've seen, you know, I don't know, 150 of them or something. And, okay, I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb. Let me make sure. Something here, but I think I'm gonna have to go with, oh, my computer just froze up, give me a second here. I'm gonna go with Kevin Spacey and Russell Crowe movie LA Confidential, and Kim Basinger too. I thought it was a really, really fascinating crime movie. My wife and I loved this when it came out. And watched it, you know, handful of times afterwards, a couple times. And I loved it. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it, but it's a really, really well done movie.
I think I did.
Yeah. Russell Crowe was a total badass in this movie. And, you know, I think this was his stepping stone to become that type of actor where he was kind of a fighting person, you know. So, he was tough in this one.
Mm.
Yeah, I have not seen it.
Really? Okay, it's really good. I would recommend it. Interesting. It's Guy Pearce is in it. I don't know if you know who that is, but
yeah,
he's really good in it. He's one of the main characters. Kevin Spacey's amazing in this one.
But yeah,
he's always really just a phenomenal actor. In fact, one of his other movies is in the running for my list. Also, I just have to decide which one I'm going to go with. But LA Confidential is really a great, great movie.
Yeah,
it you know, it takes place in the 50s. It's a crime movie, really.
It's a film noir kind of.
Yeah, it's film noir, definitely film noir. Yeah.
As I watched it for Kim Basinger, or is it Basinger? I can never remember how to pronounce her name, but I always liked her in stuff in the 80s whenever they put her in anything, and I hadn't seen her for like a long time in something, and I thought, oh, this looks good. Not really a big Russell Crowe fan, but I can take him in small increments.
I'm the same way. Like, this was the first time I ever saw him in a movie that I recall seeing him in a movie. And he just played this character so well. And then when he had more movies that came out, I'm like, oh, that guy was really good in L.A. Confidential. And mm-hmm. It was really before his career kind of really took off.
Right.
I'm like, oh, he's probably, this movie might be good because he's in it. And that was a great movie. So yeah. I really liked him in this one a lot. And I can't say enough about Kevin Spacey. He's just one of my favorite actors. He's incredible.
Yes. He is very incredible.
The whole thing. James Cromwell's in this one too, which is always always a great actor to be in there. Danny DeVito is in it. You'll recognize, if you guys watch it, you'll recognize so many people in this movie.
Yeah, I will have to revisit it.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yep, like I said, I've got nothing on it. But I am a Kevin Spacey fan, so this sounds like something I've got to make time for.
I would. It's two hours 18, so it's just a smidge on the longer side. But really, and it sets you up. It's kind of a mystery, like you said, a film noir type of thing, and it takes place in the 50s, so it's got that feel. It really has the feel of that era too, so it's very cool.
Well, I watched one of your 70s picks, so it only makes sense for me to now watch one of your 90s picks.
Okay.
So
cool.
Cool.
I'm glad I could bring something to the table for you, Dave.
Expanding my movie watching horizon is what you're doing. And it's not like I think I've mentioned this before. It's not like I avoid these things, but it's just one of those things that, you know, via life circumstances, you know, maybe, you know, I'm not, you know, at that time I would have been courting my wife, and or what year was this? Was no 98 was
97.
So just getting out of the Navy, I would have been just at the beginning threshold of my live-in relationship with the wonderful lady that would become my wife. And, you know, L.A. Confidential, it just wasn't in her venue of movies that she would have been interested in. You know, that's just the way that goes. You know, and, you know, when you're at the beginning of a relationship, you spend a lot of time trying to just say, oh, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. You do a lot of that.
Rather than assert
yourself.
Whatever
you want to do, sign with me, dear.
Mm-hmm. Or instead of saying, I'm starving, you'd say, well, I could eat.
Yeah.
So my next pick. We're on my second pick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going a little darker with this one. This is one that really spoke to me. And what it was, you know, throughout my life, I've always been very open to just anybody and everybody. You know, like, I am not bigoted or, you know, have any kind of tendency to feel ill will about anybody because of the race. But in 1998, there was a movie that came out called American History X with Ed Norton. And this movie blew my mind because it gave this viewpoint of the main character of Ed Norton having these very, very ingrained views that are completely wrong, but he's like a neo-Nazi skinhead. And you see his progression of these deeply rooted beliefs that he had in the way he was acting, which eventually led him to jail. And suddenly the people that he was aligning himself with were his own worst enemy in prison. And then the people that he was having issues with, or that he had these deep-rooted beliefs against, were actually helping him. And it was in that movie, and that's what was a powerful part, you know, is because, you know, he didn't look at people as people. He had them, you know, segregated based on their race. And, you know, he grew as a character throughout that movie. And what I love so much about it is Ed Norton just did a wonderful job of selling that. Very powerful movie for me. So did either one of you see that movie?
I'm racking my brain, and I believe I watched it, but I can't recall it.
Okay.
I know I've heard many people speak of it as a really, like you said, dark but interesting. And Ed Norton is amazing.
Yeah.
Another phenomenal actor. Okay, this is starting to come back to me a little bit. I'm gonna have to watch the trailer just to make sure, but it's, yeah. I know as this looks like a really good movie. I'm gonna have to revisit. Definitely gonna have to revisit.
Okay.
8.5 stars on IMDb.
Yeah,
out of 10. Pretty good.
Yeah, it might be one of those that are on the list that it's not one of those that, oh, you know, I've got a free night, I'm going to just go pop in American History X, you know, like we talked about with Less Than Zero, you know.
It's a feel-good movie, I get it.
You know, but it's very thought-provoking, it's powerful. I definitely recommend. Rose, did you catch it?
No, actually, I didn't watch this.
Okay.
So, I don't know. Sometimes I base my choices on movie synopsis.
Okay.
And if I were to read the synopsis for this, I would have went, yeah, no. So, just not something that, you know, seemed interesting.
Okay.
To me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, Rose, we're on your second pick.
Yay! So, I'm just, like, super surprised, I guess. Maybe I should be super surprised that no one's, you know, noticed the white elephant in the room. But I'm going to throw it out there just because it was probably one of the most, I want to say it was impactful because, truthfully, none of it could really happen, right? Wink, wink.
I cannot wait for you to tell us what it is because I don't know. You're leading up to it, but man.
When I first saw the movie Jurassic Park, I was my God.
That was on my list.
Okay.
You but can it did, make it dinosaurs?
That was on my list of 14, and I wanted it to be in the top three, but I...
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough movie. One. It's just I can't even tell you how many times I've seen this movie. There is no bad part in it. There's everybody in it just brought it to the table, from the kids all the way up to, you know, the adults. Sir Richard Attenborough, God rest his soul, just amazing. Where do I start? It's like, yeah, the very first scene, you know, here's some guy, you know, basically getting eaten by a raptor. And then you just move on, and it's like people are digging, and then, you know, it's just every scene is noteworthy. There is one scene where you kind of go, gosh, really, they could have left that out. No, they didn't even leave out any of it. It was awesome. Totally awesome. I never read the book. And I'm kind of glad I didn't, because I probably would have went, oh, they didn't bring that up. You know, oh, that was in the movie, but it wasn't in the book, and blah, blah, blah. You know how people do.
Yeah.
But, and I've done it. But it's just, you know, as far as if, I would even say it's a family movie. Wouldn't you say it was a family movie? Even though people are getting bit in half and eaten by dinosaurs. Right?
Yeah, I'm trying to place in my brain at what age would I be like, yeah, I'll let my youngest watch it. And I don't know if she's there. Well, actually she is, because she's watched like Avengers and things like that, you know.
I'm gonna say 10.
Yeah.
If you're 10 years old, then you're definitely ready for Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I think
because
so.
Because beyond that, oh, I love dinosaurs to the point to where, you know, if you grew up watching the purple guy, and he was all, I love you, you love me, and then all of a sudden somebody
now I'm gonna rip your face off.
Yeah, or he's gonna, you know, bite you in half while you're sitting on a crapper. But, you know, it's just, you gotta get past that, you know. So you're 10, you're almost 11, and it's like, okay, we're waiting, you know, we're sitting in our little jeeps, we're waiting for the electricity to come back on, and there just so happened to be a glass of water there, and you hear this thump, and the thump, and yeah, the water's vibrating, and it's ripples, just like
the ripples in the water are. It's a moment that,
yeah,
if you've gone and see the, if you've seen this movie, you will never forget that moment. That's you know something bad is coming. So if you're ever just like sitting around, uh-huh, and you have a glass of water or a mug of coffee or something, and it starts doing that, you might want to take cover.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
Yeah. Just, you know.
General school of thought. Just saying.
Yeah. It's like the first time you hear the music from Jaws. Mm. You know, it's not going to be something that's good coming. But yeah, so yeah, Jurassic Park, 1994, just to me was like a turning point for fantasy. It wasn't even a sci-fi. We can't even classify it as a sci-fi. It's like it's a fantasy because it can never happen, right? People aren't out there making dinosaurs in their basement with old DNA from fossils, right?
They make it like they made it feel like that could happen.
Yeah, they did. They totally just, you know, man, yeah, this is the concept we came up with. Isn't this cool? Look at all this. And you're like, yes, I want dinosaurs. But don't want dinosaurs.
I love Goldblum's character.
Goldblum's character. My God.
Theory
this
of
day,
chaotic, what?
Theory of chaos. Yeah, theory of chaos. Two things that I say to people, and they never get it. I don't subscribe to chaos, which I do not, and they don't get it, so it's just like, oh, it's all right. But life finds a way.
Life finds a way.
Such a kick-ass line, and it's so very true, because if you watch all the rest of them, you see how life found a way, you know?
Yeah, but I spared no expense.
Yeah, spared no expense. Yeah, that's
great movie, great pick.
Very good pick. Yeah, I love this movie.
Yeah, I think dinosaurs. You know, like somebody was actually could do what that movie was talking about. You know, it made the science fiction of it like seem real.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, one of the classic scenes is when the dinosaurs like chasing the car chase scene. And mm-hmm. you see it in the mirror, and it says, objects in mirror may be closer than they appear. It's like, could not have done that any better.
Know.
That was just awesome.
He gets close to you. He gets closer, and then you know he's a lot closer than he looks in the mirror. Like, oh, crap. Yeah. Totally awesome.
I'm sorry I cut you off, Scott. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, that's okay. I was gonna tell you my favorite scene. Or one of my more memorable scenes that I always find amusing, I guess, is when the dipstick of the film runs into the outhouse and gets killed by by T-Rex.
The lawyer, yeah.
Yeah. You're waiting for him to get killed. I mean, you're like, you're kind of rooting for it, you know? You're like, all right, go T-Rex.
Yeah. My favorite scene is the Newman. I don't know, he has a name, but when he's trying to leave and he washes off the road and he's trying to he's pulling himself back up. I don't know what the hell he's doing. He's got like a pulley and he's arguing with the dinosaurs and he's just like, yeah, you wait till I get back. Like, no, I don't think you're going to have to wait that long. I would be afraid of these little fuckers.
Yeah, didn't he say no wonder you're extinct? Like,
yeah, he did. Yeah, he totally said, yeah. You're stupid. No wonder you're extinct. Like, oops.
They did have a small brain.
You know he wasn't going to be. Yeah.
His name was Nedry, by the way.
No, he deserved it, though.
Yeah.
I forgot Samuel L. Jackson was in that.
Samuel, hold on to your butts.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
the no-nonsense guy that was behind the park.
I love Sam Neill. I think he's a great actor, too.
Oh, I love Sam Neill.
We're picking some pretty big blockbusters for the most part here tonight. That's good. Jurassic Park and... Between Jurassic Park and Braveheart.
Let's cross between Waterworld and Braveheart.
I was thinking Jurassic World, the latest one that came out, which wasn't too bad. Anyway, Waterworld. That's on my list. Not.
I knew it.
All right, so that
actually,
was...
I didn't think. Okay, just side note, I did not think Waterworld was as bad as everybody else seemed to think it was. I thought it was kind of interesting.
That's
but...
the Scott that I know and love.
Yeah, thank you.
You pimp that bad boy.
That's right. I own that. I mean, I don't own the DVD, but I'm owning that. I'm saying that it wasn't as bad as everybody else made it out to be.
It's okay.
I'm going on record to say I actually didn't mind that movie either.
Thank you. Good. That's good. Anyway, so good Jurassic Park fun stuff.
Yep.
Good fun. Lots of great dinosaur killing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so we're moving on to our third round.
So wait, real quick.
Oh, jeez. You're not helping me move on here. Come on.
I know. This is interesting because everybody always thought that T-Rex was like the badass of the dinosaur world. But then they introduced these velociraptors that seem to take over everybody's opinion of the scariest dinosaurs, even though they were a little bit smaller, but they were very aggressive and stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's all. Move on.
They're pack animals. And one-on-one, I wouldn't want to mess with any of them, so.
Yo, I'll be back in a minute. Don't go away.
My, my, my! Oh, howdy, hot there.
This day in history!
Alright, so this is This Day in History 90-something edition. The day that I was hoping to share with you guys was the day August 5th, 1994. And what happened on that day was it was the first uprising against Castro. So it was Cuba's day of national rebellion. So what happened was there was an uprising or a protest against the government policies. And there were just hundreds of Cubans that took to the streets in Havana chanting Libertad, or Spanish for freedom. And then so that was significant in itself. So, I mean, these people, you know, had this communist-run country of Castro for them to have an uprising against him. But how that personally affected me is sometime a little bit later, Castro says, okay, fine, you don't like it here, you can leave. And so many of the Cubans decided, you know what, I'm going to do that because he's letting us. So they made these makeshift rafts, just about anything that would float, and they banded it together. They put together every family member they possibly could, and then they just got into the water and started to try to make it to the United States. And how this was affecting me was, at the time, I was in the Navy, and I was stationed in Norfolk, Virginia, a small command called Little Creek, which is right off of Norfolk. And I was a data processing technician, which is basically a computer technician. And what they said was, I had my senior chief, who was in charge of our department, he had a meeting with everyone that was a data processing technician. And what he basically was looking for, someone to go temporary assigned duty to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And what happened at the meeting was, he basically voluntold me. You know, out of the whole group, he kept referring, I need a volunteer, Petty Officer White. I really need someone to go to Cuba, Petty Officer White. So it was just kind of like, you know, I really need you to volunteer, because I'm going to tell you to go if you don't volunteer. So it was like, I guess I'm going.
Yay!
So, and the reason why they need a computer technician out there, which sounds kind of odd, because you had all these refugees in, you know, going and getting picked up in these Coast Guard cutters, and, you know, basically, you know, risking their own life just to get to America. And you're like, well, yeah, sure, send a computer technician, right? That doesn't make sense. But what they had was, at the airfield, the converted airfield that used to be on Gitmo or Guantanamo Bay, they converted that to a bunch of camps for the refugees. And what they were doing was, they were using computer systems to track the history, medical, family history of all these people that were there in these refugee camps. So they needed a computer technician that would be able to help them keep all that up and running. They had these little microchips that they put on little wristbands that would put on their arms or their wrists, and they would scan them in and out of wherever they needed to go. So if they were to go eat, then they get scanned in, they get scanned out, kind of like a library book. But it would track all the information on that person, and if they needed to go to the hospital, then they get scanned in, they could put all their medical records, you know, that were associated with their ID chip and their plastic band. So it all started, you know, because of that uprising, you know, in August 5th, 1994. But, you know, it didn't affect me personally until a little bit later, but that same year. And to this day, that job that I did there was probably the most impactful thing I've ever done.
Wow.
And it was just, it's very significant, because you were right there in the thick of things. You got to see the people that you're impacting. And you got to see these people that had risked their lives, you know, for a better life. And, you know, just that human element was there. And then what was so gratifying from an IT experience was, I get out there and it was, nobody was, you know, this is how you do this, this is how you do that, this is how you do that. It was a lot of, in theory, it should work, so let's try it. So it was a lot of trial and error. It was very gratifying from a technical perspective, because they were kind of relying on, you know, those of us that had computer experience working with networks and things like that to get all this stuff, all these band-aid all these things together to get them to work.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really kind of cool.
Mm. Huh. That is cool.
So that's my history lesson and how that affected me. Do you guys did that like news event do anything to either of you?
It had no impact on me. I do remember the stories of the refugees leaving Cuba, and you know, but I was freshly married. I was only 3 months married at that point.
Okay.
And trying to decide whether to move to California at the time or not, which I don't think we moved until the next year, but, you know, just didn't have, I wish I could say I had more experience with some of the worldly things that were going on in the 90s, or, you know, it's just, I feel like it was a blur. Like, the 90s were a blur. As soon as I got married, things just kind of flew by, so
okay.
I don't have a lot of input on that one.
Right.
But I do remember hearing it in the news and the stories and stuff, and that's cool that you actually made an impact on it, on the people down there. It's awesome.
Cool. All right, Rose, got anything to add there?
I'm just, you know, I was just so surprised the fact that, you know, the whole uprising and everything, and Castro had done so much, he thought, I guess, and the people thought too, because nobody wanted to leave. Nobody, you know, there was a ban on people going there, and it was just like any country, I suppose. You know, the next generation is the future, and here they are. It's not their parents', you know, idealistic way of thinking. They're like, can't you see who this guy is? Don't you want a better life? Don't we all want to have, you know, more freedom, that type of thing? And for people to just come at him like that, and I'm like, okay, fine, you don't want to leave. And they're like, okay. And, you know, they were risking their lives. They was like the colonists, you know, coming here from Europe, you know?
Yeah.
And, they, of course, colonists had a little bit better, you know, well, I would say a lot of their, you know, ships were, of course, a lot better built, but, you know, they had a lot further to go. But it just, you know, to take that step, and you think about, you know, that leap of faith that you take, and you say to yourself, okay, this is for my family, and this is for our betterment, and this is for our future, and just doing it. I mean, there's people that can't decide in a line in Starbucks whether they should have soy or 1% milk in their latte, you know. And these people jumped in a makeshift boat with all of their belongings and all of their family members, and off they went. Freedom! Libertad! You know?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That is totally amazing. The fact that you were able to help facilitate their arrival and get everybody situated and, you know, being there as part of the United States Navy, that is so impressive.
Yeah, it was, it sticks out as kind of like one of the defining moments in my Navy career.
That's amazing.
And just a interesting note,
mm-hmm.
you know, for those of you that are fans of A Few Good Men, there is a fence line. There is a, you know, the fence line you're not allowed to go near, because if you mm-hmm. go there unannounced, they're going to think that somebody jumped the fence from the wrong side, and you mm-hmm. will get shot.
Yeah.
So that part of the movie is true. And I never saw the fence line because I was told about that story, and I value my life. So there you go. I'm here to tell the story.
There you go. That's awesome.
All right. So that's this day in 1990.
Now back to the show.
All right, so third pick. Who's up? That's Scott.
Yeah, man. Three is so hard to pick from. I've got so many incredible. There were really some there's some really, really good movies in the 90s, like really good. You know, I remember in the 80s, there were a lot of good movies, but they didn't seem as, like, epic. You know
what I mean? They picked it up a notch, definitely, in the 90s.
They did. They made a lot of these movies epic and just very broad scope, and they were just very well done. Yes, there were bad movies in the 90s, too, but there's a lot that were really, really good. And I'm going to have to go with Shawshank Redemption.
Good choice.
Oh, nice.
I remember reading the book, the short story back in, I think it was right around end of high school from Stephen King. And I never realized that it would ever, I never thought, well, that this would be a great movie. You know, I mean, it was, you know, a short little snippet of what they portrayed in the movie. And it speaks in volumes on a different level of a prison movie. You know, there's lots of prison movies done over the years, but this one was really, really good. Morgan Freeman is amazing in it. Timothy Robbins is really, really good in it. And then, of course, you have the bad guy, the warden, Bob Gunton is his name. And he just plays such a jerk. You just feel evil, like, emanating from him. Even though all of these guys are, they're all bad guys, like the prisoners, all the prisoners, they're all bad guys. They've all done really bad things, enough to end up in a prison, not just jail, but a prison for long term. And and yet you're rooting for them against the warden, who's supposed to be, you know? It's kind of weird. It's kind of a weird twist on it. You've seen that in a few movies. Like, I think it was it Brubaker or something back in the 70s. I want to say it was Robert Redford.
Oh, okay.
Might have been Brubaker. Or what was the movie that's...
I've seen a lot of TV shows that have that same kind of theme where you're rooting for the person that you shouldn't be rooting for, like Dexter or Sons of Anarchy. And you're like, these are the bad guys, and I want them to succeed.
Tony Soprano, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it goes back... Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of movies that are like that make you kind of root for the bad guy. How about Star Wars? Everybody loves Darth Vader.
They're all
everybody's rooting for Darth Vader. I have a bunch of shirts.
He's just a misunderstood father. That's all.
Yeah. So anyway, I love this movie, and I've watched it a few times, and I've read the book. I haven't read it lately, but I read it a long time ago. At least the short story version of it. I never picked up. You know, sometimes they make the book after the movie, they re-release the story in the movie format, like they did with the freaking Running Man. Sorry, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
You can read about that on BonsaiRetroClub.com under go to 80s, and you'll see my little rant about the Running Man under see the blog there. Anyway, Shawshank Redemption, freaking great movie.
Yeah, well, I didn't do it. The lawyer fucked me. great movie. I love. There's so many great things in this with just the Andy Dufresne's, you know, mannerisms, and you know, just being so educated and smart and being able to use those smarts to be just a step ahead of everybody else. And it was so well acted, well written, well directed. You know, it gave a great period piece, you know, for that time frame of what it must have been like to be in prison, you know, back then. You know, and you know, simple little things like, you know, the all the inmates wanting to retar the roof. You know, that was like a thing, that would be a thing that you'd want to do. You know, you'd be like outside, you know, and then, yeah. You know, and it's just like something that you take for granted. But, you know, a prisoner, yeah, you know, let me be outside and, you know, enjoy the day.
Enjoying a cold bottle of suds.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then
I think that was the term that he used.
Right.
Something like that. So it was
yeah. Sucks.
Yeah. Next thing you know, he's doing taxes for all the guards, and yeah, it was well done. It was a fun ride for a movie.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say it's probably the best rendition of a Stephen King story, just slightly above Stand By Me.
Wow.
Just slightly, like it's. You know, it would be like a 9.9 to a 10. Between, you know, like Stand By Me be 9.9 and Shawshank would be like 10 in my book, you know. Like if I had to rank the Stephen King movies that were taken from his stories. And Shawshank was just so well done and so well acted. And it just seems like those two movies, actually, that and Stand By Me, were on a completely different level of Stephen King novels turned to movies than all of his other movies combined. It was just, it's great, great, great movie. Well, and it, like, they got a.
I think you're on drugs for forgetting Maximum Overdrive, but whatever.
Come on, dude.
I think he's on drugs for forgetting Misery, but that's just.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good one, too. That was really well done, too. I mean, you'll never forget the hobbling scene.
No.
This is what they call hobbling.
Thanks for bringing that one back up. I have a
snap left ankle.
Oh!
Crack.
Yeah,
that was... Thanks for reminding me of that one. That's a good one. Sorry, those three, those are in a different realm than most of his other movies.
Yeah, they definitely are.
So Shawshank, where you at, Rose?
I saw the movie one time. I believe I rented it from where you rent movies. What was those
Blockbuster
places?
Blockbuster Video.
Thank you. Yeah, Blockbuster.
It
was what? Oh, no, you're right. It was Hollywood Video because I was probably boycotting Blockbuster Video because they never had any damn thing on the shelves when you got there. Like, where the hell are all these people? You got 55 fucking copies of one movie that nobody wants to see, and all the rest of them are gone. Don't get me started. Anyway, yeah, I saw the movie once, and it was really, heavy.
It's heavy.
And I just really felt like, I don't think I could go back and watch it again. The scene, you know, where they take advantage of Tim Robbins' character is just so horrible. Just really, really awful. And, at that point, you don't really know. I don't think that he's trying to plan something. But after that, you're like, oh, hell yeah, you better be planning an escape. And don't even take anybody with you because these people are just fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But it's prison, so you know, they're not in there for their good merits, obviously. But yeah, love Morgan Freeman in just about anything. And for him to pair up with Timothy Robinson's character was just really like, yeah, this is a good, not a buddy movie, but you know, it could be. But you wanted them to succeed because of the horrors that they both experienced. And you know, it was so funny because I don't know if you ever saw any of the outtakes.
Of Shawshank?
No.
Yeah, did you ever when they start doing the whole, not the director's cut, but like scenes that were taken out of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I've not seen that. I'm going to have to look that up, though.
Yeah, because of the time that it's set in, Morgan Freeman's doing some narration about, him being out, because he actually got out. He was released, I think, on, he was paroled.
Yeah,
thank you. And he goes out and he's talking about, life as a black man during that time was hard enough. But then he had to add on the fact that, now he was a newly released convict. So there's just like nothing out there for him. Just like life just had, society had no, they could care less. Basically at that point is what he was saying. And why they didn't leave it in, I mean, it did kind of go on for a while, but they could have left some parts of it in, but it just, that's a good pick.
All right, so we are on my third pick.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, and sticking with big blockbusters, this movie, I've still got the DVD, and any time that I have to monkey around with my surround sound, this is the movie I test with.
All right.
I'll put this in, and you were the first 5 minutes of this movie, and if you've got a front speakers, back speakers, and they're like the independent sounds, where you can get let's imagine if you're watching Top Gun or something, and you have like a flyby, you'd feel like the flyby go by in the room, or or it sounds like it. This movie does that with a great sound system. The movie's Twister.
Oh, awesome! Very nice.
Awesome.
First 5 minutes of this movie, if that. This is the opening sequence where you still see Helen Hunt's character as a little girl. And just the wind that's going on in the house, and the build up of that scene, and then the eventual twister that comes along, that will test your surround sound. You turn up the sound as high as you can possibly stand it, and that will freak you out in a good way, because you're like, yes, this is what surround sound is supposed to be like. Now, let's imagine you're not testing your surround sound, you're just enjoying the movie. Bill Paxton, Helen Hunt, Jamie Gertz. I mean, just fun all around. Fun all around, great movie. I loved every piece of this. Philip Seymour Hoffman, just as the goofball.
Dusty! Yeah. Dusty!
Oh my gosh.
The extreme!
You will rue the day.
He was without clothes, and he walked up to the twister and threw the bottle in, and it didn't land. Now, it was just, the delivery was just awesome.
Tasty cow, Aunt Meg.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Alan Ruck was in this, and it's just great. It was great.
Oh yeah.
I had to stop watching it.
What?
Every time I watched it, there was a tornado somewhere, like super close, like places you wouldn't think tornadoes would be, like Oregon. And I'm like, man, stop that! I want to watch this movie.
Want to enjoy the fantasy? You don't need real life intruding.
I know. Damn real life. Oh my goodness.
It's one of those things, if you get lucky enough and you're visiting Universal Studios down in Florida, and you get to go on the, it's not necessarily a ride, but they have a Twister attraction thing, and it's kind of a, it makes you feel like you're actually in the movie, and you're standing like on this platform, and then all of a sudden you see the destruction, and it's the scene where you have the drive-in theater kind of thing in the background, and It's nice and scary. It is great. So, awesome. But yeah, you're just standing there watching. You're not really, it's not a ride per se. But yeah, I love this movie. And then my wife and I even, you know, we're like, Cal. Yeah.
we have debris. You know what? We said that today. Chrissy said that today.
Cal?
We have debris.
Oh, debris.
No, just okay. Debris. We have debris. Because we were going somewhere. I went and bought a new car today. Not a new car, but a different car. I got rid of my Jeep. I'm so depressed. But my work, I have so much that I have to do with work that I just needed a truck. So I went and I bought a truck. Anyway, on the way down there, there's been so much debris pickup in all of our neighborhoods around here from Hurricane Irma. And there was this big branch laying in the middle of the road. So Chrissy's like, we have debris. It really is one of our favorite movies too, from that era. And being from the Midwest, you know, you learn to respect tornadoes and the power of them. And now down here, we're having to deal with hurricanes and all that stuff. But, Chrissy says she would prefer tornadoes because there's no buildup. You know, it just kind of happens and then it's gone. And yes, you may be completely destroyed like in some of these things, but, like the stress with the hurricane was just, days of buildup. Anyway.
Right.
Great movie. Bill Paxton, loved him in this. Helen Hunt. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Philip Seymour Hoffman. His character was just so funny, you know, he was just, yeah. And I think that's when he really kind of hit the scene, and then he went into some serious movies, and he did a great job in those too. What a loss with him, just within the, what was that, last year or year before?
It was the last years ago.
So
well, Bill Paxton also.
Yeah, Bill Paxton.
Yeah, we love Bill Paxton too.
So great, awesome movie.
That is great.
And you're right, the sound effects are really a great test for your system.
Yes.
Yeah, you got to crank it up when that thing goes through too. And I think my favorite scene in that movie is the movie theater, is the drive-in theater.
Right.
And on the screen is
The Shining.
The Shining. And you, mm-hmm. and you know, it's the moment where he sticks his head through the wall, and it's he's like, "Here's Johnny," you know, and it's kind of this moment in my head, the way I see it, you know, everybody else mm-hmm. could, whatever. It's just The Shining is going on. You see the kid riding down the hallway with the big wheel and stuff, and they cut to what's his name. what's his name? I kept drawing a
Jack
blank right
Nicholson?
Now. Thank you, Jack. Jack Nicholson. I keep thinking, here's Johnny, like Johnny Carson. You know, like
Jack.
Man. So, you know, it's just, and then it just rips apart the screen as the tornado's coming through, and then the sound effects. Like you were saying, one of the coolest sound effects is that they gave it like the sound of an. Like a demon or a monster or something,
right?
When it would like start forming, you know, there was that scene where they released that Dorothy with the truck, and you know, you saw the clouds form, and then the spout started coming down. It's like all, and it's, you know, it's like this monster. They made it come alive, you know, and it's just this is a really good pick. I missed this one, like for the 90s. I was, you know, looking through a big list of movies, and I missed this one.
Yeah,
awesome pick.
Yeah, I just love the chemistry between Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton's character.
Oh yeah.
You know, they're arguing, but yet they had respect for each other.
And, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, just a fun movie, fun ride.
Jamie Gertz was pretty funny in this one too.
Jamie Gertz.
She was so out of her element, and she played that so well.
But the best line by her, she's got her soft little, you know, she's a therapist. She's got her soft little southern accent going. She goes, I can't compete with this. It's like when she's dumping him, she's like, I can't compete with this.
Exactly. Classic. Oh my goodness.
All right, so Rose, we're on your third pick.
Well, you know, I had so many really good movies, and you know, they'll all go as what do you call those things? Honorable mentions? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, but, I'm thinking not to do too many honorable mentions, but I think we should do a continuation of this. There's so many great ones. Instead of like not talking about some of the ones and we just mention them briefly, we have so many directions we can go with this.
Oh, yeah.
With this platform now. Okay. Yeah, we can continue on and do, you know, another set of three down the road.
Yeah, I could definitely come up with another list very easily from this.
I've got easily, like you said, like a dozen.
Yeah.
No problem. I grab a dozen movies to talk about. So, I'm sorry, Rose, I interrupted again.
No, you're fine. No, you're fine.
What's your third pick?
I'm working on my speech here. Sorry. Okay. Just, you know, perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July. And you will once again be fighting for our freedom, not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We are fighting for our right to live. Oh my God, I wanted to stand up and salute the TV when I was watching that because I didn't get to see it in the theater. Saw it on DVD, probably bought the DVD. And I'm like, man, that is an awesome movie. Independence Day was like, honestly thought it was going to be crap. I really did. I was like, man, really? Look at all these people in here. How are you going to have good acting with this cast? Yeah, they did it. They totally did it. Just amazing cast. Amazing story in itself.
I think it's a blast of a movie, really.
It is. It totally is. Just so many excellent scenes. Resurgence to me, it was okay. I think they made it because they felt like they had to make it, but they really didn't need to. Independence Day stood by itself. It didn't need a sequel, honestly.
It didn't need one, but I was drawn to it. I still haven't seen it yet, though.
Yeah.
The sequel. And it was, everybody said it was such a letdown, you know, or at least critics and the media stuff, they all say it.
Yeah, it's hard coming back from something like that that's been so many years being anticipated, and then it's just like,
I think they waited too long.
They needed to bring it back. That's what happened.
Right. I just think they waited too long.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of how it works, unfortunately. I don't know how many millions of dollars it took for them to make this one.
20 years.
But yeah.
So, I mean, that's even longer than Terminator usually goes. It's like every 10. You know, I love, this is a great pick, Rose. I didn't see you picking this one. As I was scrolling through all the list, it jumped out at me too. And the special effects in this are really, really cool. There's been times when I've seen cloud formations and thinking, oh my gosh, a giant UFO is just going to come flying through that cloud right now. Cause it's like that, like especially in the Midwest, you know, you see these fronts, these cloud fronts that come through, that are shaped like almost like the way they had that set up. It was really cool. It was really great, fun movie. A lot of comic relief in it at the same time, but being kind of scary at the same time. You got Randy Quaid as the crazy pilot that was abducted at one point. Mary McDonnell, she's always fun to watch. She's been in quite a few movies.
I like her.
Yeah.
I liked everybody.
Something about her. I don't know what it is. She's
She's a quintessential really, girl.
I like her acting. And Will Smith.
Will Smith.
This is before I started not liking some of his movies in the later years. Mm-hmm. They weren't that
good.
His, some of his, political standpoints and all that stuff. When people start using their profession as a stage to voice their political opinion, it starts to bother me. I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah.
I think there's a different venue for that type. So we won't get into that tonight, though.
No. No.
Even though the whole Steelers team, except for one guy, stayed inside the locker room for the national anthem, and that's just really the only one that the one that's that did go out was a Ranger. So the Army. So anyway,
yeah,
I'm not gonna go. Don't. Let's not go there.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's keep this fun and not political.
Jeff Goldblum. Harvey Jeff Firestein.
Excuse me.
The guy that played Jeff Goldblum's dad. I can never remember his name. But
Judd Hirsch?
Judd Hirsch, thank you, from Taxi.
Judd Hirsch. He's awesome.
He is a great
actor.
I like
Harry Connick Jr. in that movie.
Harry Connick Jr. was hysterical.
Yeah. Why we are here on this particular mission, we'll never know.
Yeah.
But I do know here today that the Black Knights will emerge victorious once again.
Amen, Reverend. Amen.
I like Harvey Firestein, actually, myself.
Oh, my God, yeah. When I get sick and I get, horsey throat.
Oh, my God, I got to call my mother.
I know. I got to call my lawyer. Forget my lawyer. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Oh, goodness. Too funny.
One of my favorites was Brent Spiner as, the scientist.
Uh-huh.
You know, Data from Star Trek.
Yeah.
And then he's that goofy goofball scientist, and then he says something well, they don't let us out very much.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of exciting. What does he say? A lot of interesting things have been happening.
Yeah.
Lately. Yeah.
He's praising this, the alien, oh, this is so great. This is awesome. And, and then all of a sudden it's somebody's got new information. It's oh, what? Tell me.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's no, they do not let you all out very often, do they? Or at all. Yeah, that was trying to think. Mary McDonald, yeah, she played the First Lady. And then Margaret Collin, Constance.
Oh yeah. I like her too.
Yeah.
She's a great actress. Played Jeff Goldblum's ex-wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good one. So yeah, this is another epic type movie, very big.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very big. It had such a huge presence and special effects, and we covered some pretty good movies tonight.
Yeah.
We didn't go obscure. We definitely did not.
Yeah. I think my LA Confidential might have been the more obscure one of the group, but
yeah, but still.
Well, Blade was a little less popular, but for the most part.
I had to be completely honest, though. And I've seen, there's a lot of movies that have been out there that I've gone, oh, yeah, I remember that, but I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be able to.
Well, neither one of you had really given any time to American History X either, so.
We'll see. There you go. So. Yeah. But still, it's not an obscure movie.
I think. Yeah, I know. It's one of those ones that you've heard about.
Right.
Yeah.
Not obscure enough to be unheard of, which I'm sure.
These movies I've definitely heard of.
I'm willing to bet that we could find a couple of obscure, unheard of type movies that we like from the 90s also.
Yeah, we probably could. I'm sure. As long as you're not sending me a DVD that I have to watch, so.
Hey. Fine. That's an experience you'll forget for the rest of your life.
Or better yet, an experience you want to forget.
You'd like to forget, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just don't tell Danny Elfman.
Yes. I do not have to revisit the Phantom Zone.
It's called the Forbidden Zone.
I don't know. There you go. We're like crossing the streams all over the place tonight.
By the way, don't cross the streams.
Don't cross the streams. Yeah, that would be bad. Let's define that whole bad thing. Worst movie from the 90s. Just got to say it. I'm hesitant to even list this off as a Batman movie, but Batman and Robin, 1997, Joel Schumacher, you should be ashamed of yourself. Just saying. All right.
Do you need to talk? Do we need to? I mean, are you okay?
I'm just saying, dude, that is not a Batman movie. But yet they decided to call it
George
the Batman
Clooney
movie.
And Chris O'Donnell.
Yes. That's okay. Worst movie of the year or decade. Sorry. And there's no way that should have been classified as a Batman movie. That does not belong in the Batman catalog, is what I'm saying.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, bad, very bad. Okay. All right. So we went a little bit longer than we wanted to, but as Scott had mentioned, there's just a lot of meat on this bone that we can definitely keep chewing on for many more episodes to come. So this will not be the last of our favorite 1990 movies. We're going to revisit this topic. I'm not even sure if we're going to be able to wrap it up with just one more episode. We may need a few.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're going to have to definitely revisit several times.
Yeah, I don't even want to go through any honorable mentions because they're all really, they're great in their own right, you know, and they need time. You know, we need time to talk about them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So maybe we'll just leave it at that. And, I'm going to continue my catchphrase, which is be excellent to each other. Once again, I see a lot of people just being mean and horrible to each other, and I'm not a fan of that at all. So I want everybody to adopt the philosophy of just being excellent. And what you should know is if you want to get a hold of us, you want to get more information around Bonsai Retro Club, easy way to do that, go to our website, Bonsai, Bonzai, RetroClub.com. It's got everything that you need to know, all of our contact information, the blog that Scott talked about earlier, which thank you for plugging. And, you know, we're continuing to build that up and add content. We're on iTunes now. We're continuing to grow. We've got, you know, all the standard stuff that you'd expect us to have, the Twitter, the Instagram, Facebook, all that kind of good jazz. And all of that is linked through that website. So please go there and follow us and do all that kind of good stuff. There's also an activity we need you to do on iTunes, but Rose wants to tell you about that.
Yes, kids. We're back. We're on iTunes now in a totally different entity, but that's okay. You'll get used to it. Just get out there, listen to our podcast, Bonsai Retro Club, and review us. We like you. We know you like us. There's no denying that. So get out there on your little iPhones and your iPads and whatever else starts with I. And give us a good review. Or if you don't like us and you think we suck, bring your balls and put that down too. Because we need to know. We're not perfect. We're not perfect. We like to think we are, but we know we're not. So if you think that you have like some suggestions for the show and you would like to bring that to the table and say, hey guys, why don't you guys do this? or remember in the 70s they had this. We should talk about that. And if we agree with you, we'll do it. And if we don't, we'll tell you. So get out there and review us because we're awesome.
We also want you to subscribe to the podcast. You can do that same thing.
Oh, yeah, do that.
Yeah.
Completely forgot about that.
But nope, you're absolutely right on all points. Thank you, Rose.
You're very well.
Scott, what do you got for us? Anything? Any parting thoughts, closing thoughts?
Stay groovy, people.
Stay groovy. Rock on.
I still love the 70s. I want to get back to another 70s topic very soon. I think that's next, right?
That's next. That's next in the rotation.
Got to figure out what our topic will be.
Yeah, we're going 70s, 80s, 90s. So this being 90s, so episode 7.
7 will be about the 70s. How appropriate is that?
Yes.
Yep.
To be determined what that topic's going to be.
Yep.
Because the last one was 70s fashion. And that's definitely any time that you can spend some quality time talking platform shoes and bell bottoms, that's not to be missed.
No. Not at all.
Great.
All right. So good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, folks.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai Danielson!
Hey, Bonsai!
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 Bonsai!